This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Aside from the results, the legacy of the 2016 election may be the term fake news. A panel discussion is being held on Monday evening, February 20th at 7 o'clock in Western Michigan University's Lee Honors College. The program, sponsored by the WMU Libraries, is called How to Catch Fake News Before It Catches You. We're joined by two of the people who will be on that panel. Sue Ellen Christian is a journalism professor, and Peter Wielhauer, a political science professor at Western Michigan University. Thank you both for being here.
Glad to be here.
It's a pleasure.
Should note that the third person on that panel will be MLive regional news manager Mickey Shikilo. So let me begin by having both of you give me a definition. What would you say is fake news? Sue Ellen?
Well, fake news is not news that you simply don't agree with. It is not shoddy reporting or reporting that needs corrections or clarification. Fake news is deliberately false or misleading in a substantive way.
Peter?
I think that's a great idea. It's important for us to distinguish between news that is intentionally false in order to accomplish some other goal and news that is simply incorrect in the moment.
Is it new? I mean, we heard a lot about it in the 2016 election, but is fake news something that people have been trying in one way or another to disseminate to the public for a longer period of time?
Since the printing press, we've had fake news, and it's truly, and in fact, longer than we've had straight news reporting over the 500 or so years of printed press, we have had deliberately misleading news to get an audience. And that's what's at the heart of this, is trying to catch people's eyeballs. The difference is that now with the digitization of information, we have news that's highly shareable, and you can package stories so that you have a visual that's highly engaging with content that may or may not go with that visual. You have shocking headlines and clickbait, and all of those, of course, are 21st century phenomena.
I think it's not new. I think we've seen this, and I agree with Sue Ellen, although the history on this in terms of when it actually started, I'm not as familiar with. But certainly when we look at the history of American politics, the era of the party presses was one in which they were the dominant sources of news for the vast majority of Americans. Over time, that evolved into a more of an industrial, professionalized idea of journalism, where we got a sense that there's some objectivity, there are codes of ethics and performance. And then with the democratization, if you want, of news gathering and information distribution, I think that Sue Ellen is exactly on point in terms of saying this creates all kinds of new tools that are old techniques, but with much more power and much greater reach than they ever had before.
And the technology is perhaps one of the things that makes it a little easier to fool people. I'm thinking that a chain email looks like a chain email, whereas a fake news story can look like the New York Times. It can look like the Wall Street Journal if someone is very good at web design and those sort of things. And there's a lot of people out there now that have those skills.
Well, and I think that part of what complicates this is not just the fake news stories and the, in the short term, incorrect news stories, but also news stories that come across through a Facebook news feed, for example, that look like news stories, but that are in fact opinion pieces. So one of the things that I frequently actually get tripped up by is I'll see a headline come through the New York Times or a headline come through Politico that looks like a news headline. And when I click through, it turns out it's actually in their op-ed section. So my advice in this area is to keep in mind that you have to go look actually at the source and what is this news? Or is this just an opinion that is easy to distribute? Because it's hard to tell that on the surface.
To piggyback on what you just said, Pete, I think the viral nature of online media allows fake news to happen. And it's so easy to share via Facebook. And most of our younger generations get their news from Facebook. So that is just a phenomenon that's really difficult to stop because it's the number one source of news for people who are 35 and under.
I don't want to just lay it on at the feet of the millennials, however. I have a lot of friends on my Facebook feed who are not millennials, and they're just as prone, older generations, people who are my age or maybe not quite as old as me, but are older, that they frequently are, they just are not as critical in their thinking, and they'll spread these fake news stories because of the problems that I'm sure we'll get to, that, you know, it reinforces their preconceived ideas about what they want to be true.
And I mean, we should go there right now. The idea that partisanship is a lot of what's driving this, that if you are a conservative and you read something that says something horrible about Hillary Clinton, maybe you're more likely to believe it. If you are someone who is liberal and you see a fake news story that says something ridiculous about Donald Trump, it sounds maybe a little more plausible just because of your political beliefs. And I'm also wondering if the people who are putting it out there have moneyballed this, if we can use that term, that they know the analytics and they know the types of audiences they can reach with certain stories.
I think there's a lot to unpack in that.
Yeah.
We've known for a long time in terms of political science research and communications research that people are prone to evaluate political people, presidents, Congress, and so forth, based upon their own partisanship, their own cognitive framework. And so that gives them a basis for saying these things are true, these things are false, this person is bad, this person is good. I even use an example frequently in my class of people and whether they think the president is responsible for rises in gas prices. And when the Democrats hold the White House, Republicans are much more likely to say that the president controls gas prices. When Republicans in office, they say the president can't control gas prices. So a lot of our political evaluation is colored by the cards that we bring to the table.
Does it also depend on whether the gas prices go up and down, up or down? In other words, you know,
whatever's worse, you blame on the other guy.
Right.
And you blame on the other party.
And if your candidate is in power at that moment, then and the gas prices go down, then they must be doing something wrong.
You're going to give them the benefit of the doubt. This is extremely strong in the area of economic evaluations, which have quite important political consequences, people's evaluation of the economy.
So I guess another question here, and let me preface this by saying that there have been a couple studies which have said that fake news did not alter the outcome of the 2016 election. So important to preface it with this. But at the same time, is it effective? I mean, if you are a purveyor of fake news, if you're someone that is trying to disseminate it, is it a good way to try and move the needle one way or another, try to get candidates elected, maybe try to get an issue that you care about to go one way or another?
Well, I think in terms of identifying whether these ads are effective, we have to ask, what do we mean by effective? Does it change opinions? Does it change votes? Does it reinforce opinions and make people even stronger? Or does it cause them to question their commitment to a particular candidate? If we think effective means it changes people's votes, it wouldn't be surprising to me that these things would not change people's votes, because we are so polarized in the public that people already have their pre-existing framework. They like where they are, and what they like is news that reinforces what they already believe. So a bad Hillary Clinton headline is not going to all of a sudden make Hillary Clinton supporters really contemplate the meaning of life and the universe and everything, and then think, wow, Donald Trump really is better than Hillary Clinton. It's not going to go there. But when we look at, do people's views get reinforced and strengthened and deepened, my sense is that probably is the case. But again, giving a caveat, I don't think we have good research on that quite yet. It's too early since the election.
But we do know in general that people on social media exist in a filter bubble. A lot of people, unless they're really actively pursuing alternate sources of information, that idea of reinforcement just in general, whether it's partisan views or not, that they run in circles of like-minded people. We know that from the whole filter bubble phenomenon on social media. Pete, you bring up an interesting point about why do people do fake news? You know, why commit fake news? And partisanship certainly seems to be one of the themes. I think it's important to note also that it makes money.
Absolutely.
And so through clicks on ads and through, you know, viral traffic, it can be very lucrative. There have been news reports of people who have made $35,000 a year from their, you know, apartment just writing fake news stories. And the other motivation often is for parody, or it's a joke. Sometimes too often the joke has been on the public in this case.
Right. Well, I think that the question about monetizing these is very important. We know from years and years of research on this in the mainstream media that they care about how many clicks they get. They care about their viewers on TV and so forth. That matters. That's how they sell advertising. Given the decline in subscriptions, that's a huge moneymaker for them. So that matters a lot. But sometimes it's just down to the sheer money. When the New York Times does that, you know, I have a sense that, you know, they're not just in it for the money. They want good reporting and they want the money. But BuzzFeed had a great article in the fall about a Macedonian teenager working out of his apartment, making $5,000 a week by generating fake news on a website that was getting tons of traffic. And it was all pro-Trump information. The interview said he does not care who wins, but he knows what makes money. And so we have to be aware and cautious of the sources that we're using.
And it's an interesting point there that you've kind of touched on, because as I was looking back at articles about fake news, I was finding that before the election, there was a lot of reporting on the idea that maybe conservatives were a little more susceptible because the article seemed to be more pro-Trump and anti-Hillary and maybe seemed to be, if not changing people's minds, maybe getting them motivated. And now there's reporting showing that after President Trump has been sworn into office, there's a lot more fake news, which seems to be trying to appeal to people on the left and seems to be getting them to believe a lot of things which are simply not true. I'm wondering if maybe the phenomenon here is that the people who are of a party which is out of power are more desperate to believe things which are not true about those who are in power.
I think that everybody wants information that's going to reinforce what they already believe. It's a natural tendency that we have. It's not natural for us to seek out information that causes us psychological conflict. As a result, I don't think it's liberals or conservatives. I think it's just people. I think that's the way we're wired. And that it takes extra education, extra critical thinking skills that are so important for our students, but also important for the rest of the population. We really need to be better and proactive in terms of saying, how do you evaluate information? What makes sense in terms of the credibility of news sources generally, so that people can gain an awareness of their own biases and then respond in an appropriate way in terms of evaluating the quality of information from both sides of the aisle?
I think it's interesting to note the role of journalism within the rise of fake news. And that is what Pete had mentioned earlier on. The news organizations are tracking the number of hits on a news site, how many people share a news story, how many people watch their news video. All of these analytics are incredibly important to the success of news organizations now. And because of that, there is certainly an added emphasis on page views and on audience attention. And does that create some hype where there shouldn't be? I'm sure that's the case, depending on the story and depending on the news outlet. Does it mean that the headline might be a little bit more sensational? Again, I'm sure depending on the outlet and the situation, we could find ample evidence. And so I think that that's created an atmosphere in which even mainstream news organizations have struggled to be neutral, and particularly in a climate where we have highly partisan news organizations, and they're overtly so. You know, we're your site for the conservative news, we're your site for liberal news, right. and lots of panelists and lots of pundits. That's no secret. We'll get back to the party papers of what you were mentioning earlier, and yet this seems to also, I think, blur the lines more between legitimate news and fake news, and certainly they're distinctly different, and the intentions of mainstream news organizations are not to promote fake news, but I think some of the current setting definitely makes it easier for people to get confused about what's what.
Speaking of that, I want to read a little bit here from David Frum's piece in The Atlantic, which was warning about the possibility of an autocracy in the United States. And one of the things he gets into is the question of the media, and warns that what someone might really want, well, is the idea that you can make the public cynical by sort of blurring the lines. Believers can be disillusioned. People who expect to hear only lies can hardly complain when a lie is exposed. The inclination of cynicism breaks down the distinction between those forms of media that try their imperfect best to report the truth and those that purvey falsehoods for reasons of profit or ideology. As you were just saying, Sue Ellen, there are mistakes. There are stories which are inaccurate, and there are things that need to be corrected. Those things are not the same as fake news. Do us in the mainstream media, if I can use that term, have a responsibility to try and draw that line a little brighter for people?
Absolutely. And just for listeners, mainstream media, meaning sort of middle of the road news organizations that have tried to be neutral, certainly within a general definition of neutral in terms of being balanced and trying to get all sources and a variety of perspectives, not just either or. So mainstream, that's what we mean by that. And I think that for journalism, it's going back to the foundations of slowing it down and being right instead of being first. And there is an incredible pressure to be first in, once again, in this online and in digital world. And I think that actually, I believe that journalism is going to enjoy a real revitalization in our country as people begin to sort through what is fake news and what isn't, and really need to examine where is information coming from and what's credible. So the news organizations that consistently produce credible and well-sourced information, those are the news organizations I think that in the end will triumph during this era.
I certainly hope that that's the case. I'm not quite as optimistic because I'm concerned about the tendency in our current culture to not read. We've moved to reading our first paragraph, and that's all we want to know. Reading deeply is increasingly a struggle. And so the challenge with the kind of changes or evolution that you're talking about, or reemergence that you're talking about, actually requires citizens to read more deeply and to click through to not just what people are saying about sources, but to original sources, going to the about pages and figuring out who is actually publishing this material. And that it's so much extra work, and we've become kind of complacent. And so I really hope that that's the case. That's what I try to encourage people to do. At the talk that we give in a couple of weeks, that's certainly the kind we're going to give some tips on how to help students and people in the community make those choices and have some quick cheat sheets on how to accomplish that. But until people are willing to read and read deeply and read things they disagree with, I'm just not quite so sanguine.
Well, just to not put all, certainly the burden is on the reader, but I do think for news organizations, they can tell the story visually, they can tell the story through audio. And so part of being a journalist is to help audience members sort through the information. And I think that as news organizations establish their credibility again and again, what I hope is that the audience will trust that they've done the deep reading for me. And I don't have to go, I mean, to me, that's the part of the role of a journalist is they've done it for me. They've gone to the primary source. They're telling me where they got it. If I want to go find that, I can. But I don't have to do that because I trust this source. That's what I'm getting at. Because I absolutely agree with you, Pete. People are not going to do the digging that you need to do to unilaterally come to your own conclusions about what's true and what's not in terms of fake news.
I also wonder the responsibility of those mainstream news organizations to reach out to people who are alienated from them. Pew Research regularly puts out good research about conservative media outlets that conservatives trust, media outlets that liberals trust. And I do wonder if there's a strategy that the mainstream media could use. What could WMUK do? What could an NPR do? What could New York Times and Washington Post do to reach out to the audience that they've lost to sources like Fox News and MSNBC, precisely because those provide the red meat that people want? What could they do to proactively reach out?
If you notice, NPR has been including far more conservative pundits on their interview shows and just in their daily news reporting than I can recall in recent years.
A lot of people from National Review.
Yeah, I think they're really making an effort to try and say, let's get all voices.
Good.
So what should set off the fake news detector in the reader out there who comes across something in their Facebook feed or elsewhere? What should make them question just a little bit more than they would if it was, coming from the newspaper they read when they were growing up?
Are Pete and I allowed to do our alarm sound now?
Sure.
Our siren?
So I have a few things that, as I've been looking at reporting on this, recommendations that people have, just looking at my own experience where I've been duped and say, wow, I run across these things all the time. One is look for headlines that have lots of capital letters. If they have lots of capital letters, that's basically the internet version of screaming. They're trying to evoke an emotion in you. So just be cautious when you see lots of caps. If you see headlines that use lots of hyperbolic words, like destroy, and hate and ruin. I mean, those kinds of things, those are trying to evoke a strong emotional response. That should put your warning signs. I suggest being really careful about when you see a headline or a story that appears to reinforce the stereotypes you have of other people. If you see a news story and say about what Trump people did and you say, I always knew they were like that, be careful, because that story in and of itself might have a germinating idea in it that actually is not true. And this is actually what we've seen in some of the recent reporting, is that this is kind of what dupes people, both on the left and the right, but it occurs in both places.
I love the word choice, too, of dupes people, in that even if you're reading something and you agree with it, it makes you feel good. Yeah, I knew that candidate was an idiot or whatever. I hope that we can appeal to people's own sense of being used, so that these fake news sites are using you no matter what persuasion you are politically or in terms of your opinion. I hope it gives people the added incentive to take a moment and think, does this just sound too good to be true? I think that's one great, test for, is it fake news or not? Another one is just look at the site beyond the capital letters and the screaming words and, by the way, also the exclamation points. Some of them look quite sophisticated. And right. I would look at the website of origin and look at it really closely. There's a common one that says abcnews.com.co. And so you might go, oh, it's abcnews.com. No, it's not. And so looking at the website of origin, by the way, if you go to that website and you cannot find the location of the news organization, that should be a huge red flag. Every bona fide news organization has a mailing address, and it's not a P.O. box. Another one would be check the byline, meaning the person or people who authored the article in question. That's an incredibly helpful way that you can quickly search them and find out if they even exist. Sometimes their author pages will be such that it'll say they won the Pulitzer Prize. Well, that's also an easy check. checking the date. A common tool of fake news is to take a picture like an Obama drinking champagne and couple it with a current event, such as legislation or talk in Congress about raising the income tax on the wealthy. And so taking a photo from 2 years ago and coupling it, juxtaposing it with a current circumstance, that's fake news. And it also, so just checking the date and even though they're both quote unquote real events, by putting them together, the result is fake news. There's also some great fact-checking sites out there. You've mentioned Politico, factcheck.org. Snopes has been around since the mid-90s. S-N-O-P-E-S is a, there's some very good...
PolitiFact is another one.
Thank you, PolitiFact. Yep.
These are all ones that, especially FactCheck and PolitiFact, they kind of have their own biases. They like to check the work of other people on the other side. And so there's a kind of
a
regression to the mean in that. A lot of my conservative friends have become increasingly suspicious of Snopes, however. Oh. They recognize Snopes, and I've been using it for years, but they say, look, these are Democratic contributors.
Oh, good
so,
to know.
I mean,
good
just,
to know.
It's just good to know what the, what the bias of any, even your fact-checking sources is.
I had one other tip, and that is to think about the support. Who are the sources named in the story? Because sometimes they are really pretty hysterical. Once you read past the headline, which, as you had noted, most people don't. And so if you start reading, that's when the reading can get really good and lively, and you realize, oh, this is a joke or a parody, or they never expected anyone to read beyond the first sentence. And all you need to do is look at, is there such a thing as this department or this office? Or I think a dolphin was one source that was quoted in a DC story.
I went to one source recently where I looked at the source and I clicked through in the sources that it claimed, and it took me to a different story. And then that story on the other site gave its sources, and I clicked through that story and it took me back to the first site. So it was a complete cycle where they were reinforced, two different sites using the sites to reinforce each other. No independent sourcing. So look out for those kinds of things, folks.
Peter Wielhauer is a professor of political science at Western Michigan University. Sue Ellen Christian is a professor of journalism at Western. Thank you both for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you, Gordon.
A panel discussion hosted by WMU Libraries is called How to Catch Fake News Before It Catches You. Sue Ellen Christian and Peter Wielhauer will be joined by MLive regional news manager Mickey Shikilo for that program. It begins at 7 o'clock Monday evening, February 20th, in the Lee Honors College Lounge. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.